Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello friends, and welcome to your midweek edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast. Here we go again. Ipswich Town are out of the EFL Trophy in grimly predictable and familiar style. They squandered a 2-goal lead against the children from Arsenal last night and went out on penalties. Clearly we're going to have to break that down in short order. With me today, the two highest of Kings, the Dr. Stuart Watson and Hutch Hogan, Andy Warren. Stewie, before we get into the Arsenal game, you tweeted last night there will be no Wembley this season, already writing off the playoff final. Is that your stance?
I'll be honest, I hadn't considered that at the time. I was kind of referencing this competition specifically. So apologies there. I guess technically it can still happen in the league, although I think everybody's not feeling that optimistic about that scenario at this moment in time. But no, that was just a reference to this competition. That was a real opportunity to go all the way in this competition, and squandered is the word. And feeling pretty downbeat after last night, I have to admit.
And that's not just because you got into bed at about 3 a.m. when you sat up writing your Stew Says bit, which is online now, very interesting as ever. Andy Warren, your partner in crime, this show is going to be probably fairly negative. A bit depressing, maybe, but I want to start with some positivity, some joy and some fun, because last night, after months of bemoaning and complaining about the lack, quite rightly, I might say, about the lack of pizza at Papa John's EFL Trophy games, you were greeted, my friend. I'm not sure if you were greeted or indeed the logistics of how it arrived or how it got there, but you had a pizza at this game, courtesy of friend of the show, number one with a bullet, number one with a pizza in this case, DJ Daryl Jones, all the way from Florida. The man is simply unbelievable. Tell us all about it.
Unbelievable scenes. Papa John's are rubbish at making a spectacle of the trophy that they've sponsored. I haven't necessarily been bemoaning my own personal lack of pizza, but just the lack of pizza anywhere to be seen at these games. Could they have a little truck outside games selling pizzas? Could they do competitions at half time for some fans to win pizzas in the stands? But no, absolutely nothing. I haven't seen a pizza in the 2 years that this happened until last night. Stuart was behaving very very strangely in the lead up to kickoff. Asked me if I'd had. He said, have you had dinner? And he's like, no, I haven't had dinner. I'll be relying on a pie on a plate like usual. And he's like, no, you won't, because there's new food at the football ground. This is his funny blag to disguise what was about to happen. There's new food. So that was exciting. There was going to be new food, but there wasn't any new food. So I had put a pie on a plate, at which point, as I move my fork towards the pastry, security, a member of the hospitality/security team just comes into the pressure. Andy, there's a pizza for you in reception, which is unusual because I don't work at the football club. It's a bit, getting things delivered to the reception of places that you don't work is a bit forward. So I assume
I was part of the ruse. I should explain that Daryl had tipped me the wink about an hour in advance that this was happening. So thank you very much, Daryl. That still blows my mind that a man in Florida ordered a Papa John's pizza to the Portman Road press box. And that's what we consumed. Thank you.
Let's get into details. Clearly, the topping is the key question. What was it? How big was it? How quickly did you eat it?
I can't tell you where it sits in the Papa John's rank. I think this might be the first time I've ever had a Papa John's pizza, or maybe the second, but I can't tell you where it sits in their sizing order. But it was quite big, had pepperoni on it, and it was really quite tasty.
Fantastic. And also, I mean, the logistics of it, as you say, a man in Florida sitting ordering a pizza for a man attending a football game in Suffolk. Because generally speaking, you try and take any food into the ground, it gets confiscated, doesn't it? So they've clearly bent the rules here for you, Hutchie.
They know
who you are.
I think there was a brief attempt, I think, from a steward who questioned whether that should be going up the stairs, but just kept walking. No one was going to take our pizza away. Stuart and I had shared it out. Had some each. Brenna Woolley had a little bit. It was very well received in the press box. It's probably still up there in that press box bin that doesn't get emptied all that often. So that box is stuffed in a bin up there.
That is superb. Thank you very much.
That box, that Papa John's trophy box, is stuffed in the bin just like Ipswich's chances in said named competition. There's your segue, Mark.
There's a perfect segue. I was going to talk about how you eat your pizza, but let's go straight to the game.
Hands and mouth.
Well, yeah, but do you fold it? I'm hoping there's no knife and forks involved. Generally, obviously, there wasn't last night. Do you fold it? Do you use the folding method?
No.
No.
Not two-handed. That's mental. Just eat.
I don't like the full kind of, I know what you're saying, the vertical kind of fold in half.
Yeah.
That's too far to me. That's basically creating a calzone. I don't want that. It's just I don't know what sort of degree of bend, just enough to just so that it doesn't go sort of too limp floppy in your hand.
Limp at the end,
but not the full fold.
Excellent. And if any of the KOA army do eat their pizza with knife and fork, please unfollow the show and never listen to us again. Boys, Ipswich Town, as you say, Stu, stuffed in the bin their chances of going to Wembley, at least in the EFL Trophy this season. Where should we start with this, boys? Because there's a lot to unpack, as they say. Town, in a grimly familiar story, took a 2-goal lead. Peek behind the curtain time, boys. About 9 p.m. last night, I was sitting pretty. The back of the Star had already been written. I picked out the pictures. The spread was fully pictured up. All I was waiting for was the formality of the game being finished 2-0 Town into the next round of the EFL Trophy. I was already starting to write something about when the third round draw was for Webb. And then I refreshed my Twitter and I loudly exclaimed a profanity to see that Town were now 2-2. And from there, it was grimly predictable as to what would happen. So, Stewie, do you want to kick us off? Because this was depressing indeed.
It's the third time this season that they've let a 2-goal lead slip. Wimbledon at home, Cambridge away, and now this. That's not very good, is it? Top teams, successful teams don't let 2-goal leads slip. And they've done it plenty of times from winning positions now. I think it's 10 times all told that leads have been slipped, let go to either to lose or draw games. The most frustrating thing is they do the hard part, they get the job done. They started quite poorly. There was a lot of loose passes. You're thinking, oh, is it going to be one of these nights where they make 11 changes? It's a load of players that are a bit rusty and haven't played together and it could be a bit disjointed. And Arsenal got some good young players, clearly. But they grew and grew into it. They got the 2 goals, the second of which was particularly well worked. And that really should have been it there. Balogun missed an absolute sitter around an hour. And you're thinking, that's it. 2-0, shut it down. And they just don't. Somehow they managed to shoot themselves in the foot, self-harm from absolutely nowhere. They score really good goals, but they concede really crap ones. And the both of those last night go down as that. Kane Vincent-Young, inexplicably, having watched it back, just heads into his own net from a corner. Set pieces are a real issue for me at the moment. They just continually not defending them particularly well. And then Halaki's should never, ever be beaten from that sort of angle at his near post for the second. So, and there's just adds to this sense of, you know, here we go again, the false dawns of being an Ipswich Town fan. Just when you kind of muster up this optimism and belief and enthusiasm for the weeks ahead. They just kind of pull the rug out from under your feet, don't they? So,
Hutchie, Stewie says it was 11 new players, as it were, a completely changed squad. But when I saw the squad before kickoff, I thought, yeah, I like that. I like the look of that. What did you make of it, and what did you make of the game as a whole?
So 11 players that can't get in the league team. So I think we knew to maybe fear that there'd be a bit of rust, ring rust, and players looking to get up to speed. But they're all players that are former team that should be capable of beating Arsenal's young players, just like the Ipswich senior side that lost to them last season was. So yeah, there's some players in there I was looking forward to seeing. I was glad Tom Carroll was back. I was looking forward to seeing him and Idris. That looked decent. Obviously, we all want to see Piggott get himself going. So we knew he would play. It was the side largely the side we were expecting, wasn't it? And it was a team that did get the job done against Arsenal and managed to throw it away.
Shall we talk about some of the players who did impress you? Because there was one in particular last night, obviously making his return from the frigid cold of the Ipswich Town fringes. Caden Jackson come in and scored two goals, which was tremendous stuff. He clearly was the standout name from last night. Anyone else impressed you, Stewie, in terms of putting their hand up for the cup this weekend and the league team even going forward?
Yeah, first of all, on Caden, I thought he did well. Clearly, he scored two goals. The first one takes a bit of deflection, but he was first on a loose ball and took it on and took the shot. And too often Ipswich players are guilty of maybe not taking a shot when it's on. So fair play to him for that. And then the second one's a really good striker's goal, even though he's playing on the right, good bit of movement. And a nice finish on the stretch. So Cook kind of called him the shining light of the night or something. I can't remember the phrase, but I wouldn't necessarily say he was I don't know if that's going to be enough to get him in the league fold, if I'm honest, with Sonny Aluko. Obviously, while Burns is out, maybe he's got himself on the bench. Maybe he's thought that maybe he's pushed himself into kind of super sub territory. I don't know. In terms of others, I thought Tom Carroll, I like. I thought before he got injured, you could see that you can see his background. You can see he's been a Premier League player. You can see he's got classy moments. He can pick a pass. And lovely little disguise pass to Andy, wasn't it, in the build-up to the second goal. Considering that was his first appearance since the end of September, I thought he did well. Idris, thought he was the player who looked like he had the most desire on that football pitch. He was the one that was really sort of tigerish. I thought he pressed high. He got stuck in a little bit. So there were some decent performances in there. But as a team, it just didn't come together.
Hutchie, when Stewie there said he's not sure that Caden's done enough to be considered for the league team, for those not watching on video, I'm not sure if he's going to go out on video because Roscoe is still very much ill in the realms of the unwell. You kind of rolled your eyes and shook your head, kind of saying no. Where do you stand on
no.
Caden then?
No. What I think he might have done is possibly he might twist Paul Cook's arm to start him in the FA Cup when he might not have done, potentially. But I think he's got a significant way to go to get into the league team. Like Stu said, the bench might be an option for him. He's not been making benches, so I don't think. I thought he played quite well actually, away from the goals. I think he's getting better at the running patterns that you need from a right sider. I'm not sure the crossing is there for him, but I think he's getting better at maybe in terms of the runs that he makes, being able to hold his runs a bit more. He had some good moments with Vincent Young that I quite liked. They linked up, but I think just by seeing how sporadically he's even making benches in the league, I think it's a long way to go for him for a league start. But you never know. He might have just grabbed an FA Cup start, which is the next step. Do it again there, and maybe you do make your point. But I'll be honest. Stu's mentioned the players that had decent nights, but as much as I think Idris and Tom Carroll have served reminders of what they did, I don't think there was anybody on the pitch that's going to be twisting Paul Cook's arm to start them in the league on the back of that. If I'm honest, I think Carroll needs to just play more. Lucy's right. You can see his quality. That disguised pass for Penny to cross for the second goal was brilliant. You can, as Stu said, you can see his class, but he needs to prove his fitness before you chuck him in from a start. Hopefully he'll start in the cup again at the weekend. And I think Idris, given that Scott Fraser dropped in to the midfield at the weekend, and then obviously Evans and Morsi Cook likes and trusts and goes with, I think Idris has got a job to do as well. But Idris is one I really like. I think he's probably surprised Paul Cook with what he's done this year. And again, hopefully, I'm sure his performance will put him closer to being a regular on the bench, because he's not a regular on the league bench either at the moment. So, long story short, don't think anyone's made the complete jump, but some might have made a transitional move.
A potential argument for Matt Penny. He wasn't perfect by any stretch. He had a really, really poor start where he gave the ball away cheaply a few times. He's a bit hot and cold, Matt Penny. When he's good, he's very good. And when he's bad, he's awful. But Bailey Clements has been fine. He's been no better, no worse. But Ipswich need better than fine. I think Bailey Clements does what it says on the tin. You know he's going to put in a certain mileage on the pitch. He'll get up and down. He's fit. He's all of that. But Matt Penny looks like someone who can supply with the assist. He can have a moment like that. And maybe he did enough last night to, you know, even at the end, he was still going on strong. He was the one trying to sort of burst to the byline with a 1-2 in stoppage time at the death. He might have done enough to get himself in this league team.
But that all adds up to left back being a little bit of a problem area, doesn't it? That's kind of...
Yeah, this is as much to do with where the door is ajar in the league team as to, rather than us saying someone had an 8, 9 out of 10 performance and made themselves, you know, impossible to leave out.
Okay. In that case, then, is there anyone who really didn't do themselves any favours last night, who kind of pushed themselves further away from consideration? Clearly, I mean, there's one guy who wasn't even on the bench who you may have expected to see in this game, is Louis Barry. Can we deduce that he is...
Oh, he's done, isn't he? You're not getting in the squad for that game last night. He's going back to Aston Villa and he'll be going elsewhere. There's not a huge amount more to say on him. Rakeem Harper leaves me underwhelmed every time I've seen him play, unfortunately. For somebody who described himself as a beast in pre-season, I'm yet to see evidence of that. For a big, strong boy, I was told he was, you know, someone who could, you know, power out of dangerous scenarios and drag the team up the pitch and all that sort of stuff. I'm not seeing it for him. He has moments of quality, no doubt about it. He had a really lovely left-footed volley that the goalkeeper clawed out the top corner last night. But in terms of his general, the way he sort of affects the game over 90 minutes, I'm not seeing it.
I don't think we know what he is. I don't know if he knows what he is, and I don't know if Paul Cook knows what he is. Because he was obviously a nailed-on starter as one of the defensive holders in August, wasn't he, in the first half of September. And now we're scratching our heads over what he is. That isn't a great position to be in, not knowing what your role is in a Paul Cook team, where it's about knowing your role and doing your job. It's a bit kind of New England's Patriots-y. Mm-hmm. In a Paul Cook system, everyone has their function and you do your job, and I'm not sure they know what Rakeem's is.
Others, I would... Cameron Burgess... He can head it away. There was a nice little sort of long-legged block in the box at one stage. But he worries me at times. If you get him on the turn, he looks awkward, doesn't he? You know, if somebody gets sort of in behind him on the turn, he's always got one of these like rugby-esque sort of desperate tackles on someone because he knows pace-wise he's not going to be able to keep up with them. Still yet to be convinced by him, if I'm honest.
Okay. Shall we move on to talk about Cook after the game? Before we get to that, actually, is there anything that Cook could have done for you during the game? Because clearly there's a lot of focus after the game as to kind of, he's been criticised quite a lot, hasn't he, for substitutions and not being tactically flexible this season. Was there anything that for you he could have done during the game? Did it start to get away from Town? You say to you they should have closed the game down. Is there anything for you, Hutchie, that could have done to divert what was happening on the pitch?
The substitutions were relatively late, weren't they? They were after 70 minutes. A load of senior first team league players coming off the bench, but not possibly. But the team that was on the pitch was good enough to do the job that Stu said there to close. They had won the game. They put themselves two goals up against an Arsenal under 21 team. They had done what they needed to do. They were 2-0 up, and
it's not necessarily about changes for me. When people talk about the timing of substitutions, it's not like a case of, oh, we should have brought on an extra defender, or we should have changed the formation. It's a mindset of the players. It's something, a mode that you kind of switch to, where you just, it's not necessarily about changing, but just an element of focus, just keeping your shape, being disciplined, just keeping the ball, not necessarily taking as many risks, just slowing the game down, just making it your game. And I don't know, they don't seem to be able to kind of fall into that mindset.
Well, I think last night the problem they gave themselves is they gave Arsenal kind of the room to play. They stood off them, and that goes to what you've just said, Stu. If you're 2-0 up, you still need to be on it. Like you have done enough to win the game, but you still have to win the game, and you can't, particularly with these young sides who love to have the ball. And they love to have room to use the ball, and they love to shift it around quite quickly. And they gave them the opportunity to do that. There was some counter attack. They were stretching the defence, pulling it around all over the place. The midfield, I think Carroll may be tired a little bit. I don't know if he could have, if that, understandably, after so long out, you could potentially have made a change there, just so there's that bit more energy in the midfield. But by the time that became apparent, the goals had gone in, and once the Arsenal goals had gone in, Ipswich went about their task again. After that, Joe Piggott had his most lively 10 minutes of the game, with the final 10 minutes. He had a header over. He had a shot from outside the box that was well saved by the goalkeeper, and then he had the ball in the net in the final couple of minutes, but the flag was up for offside. So they got back on it again once the damage had been done. But they allowed that damage to be done, and then ultimately you're in a penalty lottery at that point. And it doesn't matter if you're a young team or an experienced team at that point. Anyone that was on that pitch is capable of winning and scoring in a penalty shootout. So
I thought Selina's penalty kind of summed up a shorthand for Ipswich, which is inconsistencies at the minute. Like a 3 days on from scoring one of the best goals we've ever seen at Portman Road. He produces that penalty, just fluffed it. I don't know if he changed his mind in the run-up. When he steps up, you're thinking, is he going to do a Panenka? Is he going to do something? And I don't know if he almost had things like that in his mind, or he changed his mind in the run-up, but it was just a powder puff effort down the middle, really, wasn't it? One of those ones where the goalkeeper didn't really have to move. And it's kind of where Ipswich are at the moment. Is, you know, someone like Carl Edwards can do all sorts of brilliant stuff, I thought, you know, but hasn't got the end product still. That was the same story again for him last night. There's lots of good, but just not quite the finishing part. There's something just missing, isn't there?
I hate those penalties. I really do. Like, yes, he scored one against Colchester and they look great, but Bersan Celina is also capable of beating a goalkeeper properly from 12 yards, and you don't risk making yourself look a fool like that. Just put the ball in the net, find the corner. They're all capable of doing it, particularly Bersan Celina is capable of doing something. I don't try and be too clever. I don't like it. I had a gut feeling he was going to miss that penalty. And he did. Just don't do it.
To use a Hutchism, just get it done. Whack it into the net. Right, boys, obviously we're going to have to talk about Paul Cook for a bit, in short order, but before we do, it's slightly uncomfortable with me that the manager is frequently the focus of ire after losses, whatever they are. Do the, I mean, we have spoken about this before, but the players get away a little bit scot-free, don't they? I mean, you could never legislate last night.
Well, Paul Cook was asked that in his post-match interview about with the nature of the goals being individual errors, must leave you so frustrated as a manager, because there's nothing you can do about that on the touchline. And he said after one of the goals went in, someone in the crowd immediately shouted something at him, and he turned around and said, "How about shouting at the players?" And he very quickly sort of doubled back and said, "Look, you know, I'm saying that semi-jovially. Of course, the manager is always the one that takes the brunt, and I'll always protect my players." But he has got a point. Paul Cook can't legislate for Kane Vincent-Young heading into his own net at a corner. Paul Cook can't legislate for Vaclav Halaki letting one underneath his body at the near post, can he? So I do feel for him in that respect, but this isn't a one-off. You know, this is a recurring theme now as we approach the halfway stage of the season, letting leads slip, all of that sort of stuff. And we talked about sort of having that mode, that game management mode that they go into. And I guess that is down to the management and the staff to be able to kind of work on that during the week. And you know, this is what we do in certain scenarios in games. And you wonder whether, as much as it's great to hear Paul Cook talking about being front foot, aggressive side, and yes, that is entertaining more at times. Do they need to work a little bit more on some of the more pragmatic stuff? Do they need to work a little bit more on defending set pieces? Possibly.
Cook, after the game, starting to get a little bit repetitive in terms of the things that he says. "I don't know anything more than I knew at the start of the game. I haven't learned anything." Kind of speaks about letting the fans down, etc. But one thing in particular caught my eye when I read it last night, as you sent it across, Stewie. "Until we change the individuals, then the individual errors won't change." That, for me, is eye-opening, because this is a man who's literally just changed all of the individuals in the summer. So what do you make of that, Hutchie?
I think it's something he might have regretted saying, potentially, at this point. You have to wonder who he's talking about. You're right. He has changed all of the individuals, but there were some remnants of the past in that team last night, weren't there, with Vincent Young and Wolfenden. But Paul Cook's not been scared to get rid of players that he's not happy with quite soon after signing them as well. It's eye-opening that he's said it. I think he will regret it, potentially, saying that. But talks about players being too comfortable again, didn't he? And it'd be very interested to know who he was talking about specifically there. But he's used so many players. I don't know what the true number is, but he must have used 50 players as an Ipswich Town manager since March. And the individual mistakes are still happening, and they're still frustrating him. So it,
for me, 50
players
is
a lot.
I'd like to hear him talk more. I love his passion and his honesty, and it's really refreshing. But at times I'd like to hear him sound more like a manager and less like a fan. The way he sort of reacts afterwards is how someone who's just gone and paid their money and comes away and just talks in a frustrated manner about what they've just seen. He describes perfectly well what we've all just seen. He doesn't try and sugarcoat it, but sometimes you want to hear sort of as soon as you then start to get into, okay, you've described what the problem was, so how is this going to change? And then immediately he just goes, "I'm not going to analyse that now." And you think, well, you need to kind of give those listening reason to believe that this is going to change. You know, that's that for me is where some of the slight concern comes from at times. As refreshing as it is, you want to hear, How is this going to change? Don't just tell us what we already can see with our own eyes. But yeah, I mean, he signed 19 players in the summer. And as Andy says, who's he talking about here? Are we going to get Demolition Man 2.0? At some stage, you can't keep looking for answers externally. The job of a manager, of a coach, is to improve the players that you've got, to get a tune out of what you've got. He's played that card once last summer in terms of ripping it up and starting all again. I'm not sure that that's a card you can be playing again just a few months later.
You'd have to have a lot of, I think you'd have to have a lot more credit in the bank to be playing that card as well as a manager. I'm not sure that going to the board, that Mark Ashton and the board, and saying that that's what you want to do again, is, I'm not sure he's in a position to do that. But I'm sure there will be tweaks and changes to the squad in January. I guess we have to, on this specific occasion, he's talking about his, let's call them his second string. But I'm not sure he's that entirely taken by his first string either. So it's, yeah, we shall see.
Yeah, and the other quote, obviously, that I think probably people have seen as well, personnel around the club might feel they are safe sometimes, but that's not how it works at big clubs. Stewie, before we move on, is he just too rigid? We've spoken before about not having the right pieces, maybe, for what he wants to do. He doesn't have the flying fullbacks at the moment, which has a knock-on effect to everything else that he wants to do. We know he loves his 4-2-3-1. I don't want to get too much into formation, but is he just too rigid, do you think, at times? Should he be trying, just period when he doesn't have those fullbacks that he needs for that system? Should he be trying other things? Should he be saying, okay, I haven't got the kind of ingredients for that recipe, but I maybe have ingredients for something else which might be quite tasty in the meantime, you know, that kind of thing?
Possibly, but I don't know. If you then said, what is that alternative at the moment? You could go, okay, three at the back. Burgess has played in a back three. Danasian could play in a back three. You've got centre-back options. But then I'd then say, well, what are your wide options? If you were, you know, who are your wing-back options? I still don't know if you've got the answer there. For me, the crux of this is, if you wanted me to put my finger on the one thing that's holding them back at the minute, it's the fullback issue. Everything about Paul Cook football is based around marauding fullbacks. We know that. They've got the flair players at the front end of the pitch, but they're just kind of relying on them to produce moments of magic like Selena last weekend. But for it to be a fully functional team that's able to kind of apply sustained pressure and in games and be knocking on the door, and I'm not sure the fullbacks are there at the moment. I don't know how Ipswich, with the greatest respect, have got to such a crucial stage in the season recently and have ended up with Bailey Clements playing there. I'm sure Bailey Clements is a lovely young man. He's worked really hard, but he's 21 years old and has been kind of playing in the 23s for a number of years. Realistically, if he was the long-term answer for Ipswich, I think he would have emerged by now. I mean, obviously, they couldn't have legislated for Coulson to have the injuries he would have done. Kane Vincent-Young hasn't been able to get to his pre-injury levels. The hope was obviously there. I think they obviously did have a sniff around right-backs leading up to the end of that transfer window. Obviously, we've seen Danny Cowley quotes about Marlon Romeo on transfer deadline day. So that will be the area of the squad that I think they'll look to improve, both left back and right back in January, if I'm honest. And I think that, you know, that could change the whole dynamic of things if they get those two pieces correct.
It's the left back that worries me the most. The right side, I think, works when Burns is in the team. I think Burns and Danasian's a really good partnership. I'm not sure, as well as Aluko's played, I'm not sure he helps Danasian, who we know needs a bit of help himself to be that right back. But I think the Burns Danasian partnership works on that side. But obviously Burns is injured, so that hasn't been able to happen. So I think when that's not there, that falls down a little bit. But left back's the big issue.
Talk about partnerships, and Cook talked about partnership. We need to see partnerships develop, and partnerships always sort of develop in front of your eyes in my teams. How many have we seen now, halfway stage coming, would you say is a really nailed on partnership? Like you say, Burns and Danasian was becoming one. Burns to Bond was becoming a bit of a go-to move for Ipswich. But beyond that, there's not a striker and a number 10 that are really on the same wavelength.
Yeah, Morsi, I think that's Evans, the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem with the partnerships. That doesn't exist in that area of the pitch. Morsi and Evans is kind of a pre-pack, buy one, get one free, like, partnership bought in. I still think they're doing their job that Cook wants them to do, but just not in the team that's functioning the way it's supposed to. Toto and George Edmondson, I think, is becoming a bit of a partnership, just maybe by weight of games, but I think you're right. Beyond that, there's no left-sided partnership because that position has changed so many times. There's no partnerships whatsoever within that three behind Bonn, aside from Burns, because it changes so often. We've seen Chaplin. I think Chaplin and Bonn is probably the closest, I would say, to something that's clicked in the 10 and striker positions, but that's not happened on a regular enough basis. It is still a work in progress, isn't it? But you'd have expected the work to be further down the line and a few less cones out than there are now.
Mm. I mean, it all comes back to identity, doesn't it? And that kind of thing we've talked about a lot. I was looking this morning, League One table, December the 2nd, 2020. So a year ago today, Town were fifth. They'd played 15 games. They had 26 points. They'd won 8 of those games. As we sit here today, December the 2nd, 2020, Town are 11th. They've played 20 games. They've got 27 points and they've won 7 of those 20 games. And I keep coming back to I believe in life, you are what you repeatedly do. And Town repeatedly, unfortunately, they squander leads, they lose big games and they crumble under pressure, which is something that has been happening for the last few seasons.
They follow up good performances with poor ones. That's a repeated theme. If you go back through the results this season, in terms of what comes after a win, okay, Lincoln, when they finally got that first win, they followed it up with the late draw against Sheffield Wednesday, so we can kind of discount that. But the 6-0 against Doncaster was followed up with an awful performance at Accrington. They beat Shrewsbury at home and then squandered a 2-goal lead at Cambridge. They got the last-minute winner against Fleetwood and then went and lost at Plymouth, albeit with an OK performance. After the Wickham 4-1, was the really flat cup game against Oldham. After Crewe last weekend, we got that last night. So there's just this sense now with Ipswich, and this goes back quite a long way, that it's one step forward followed by two steps back, and it breaks your spirit after a while, and that is the stage we're at, I think, with fans. Paul Cook and all the hierarchy at Ipswich need to understand this isn't just about the frustrations of this season. This is so deep-rooted in all of us that have followed this football club over the last decade or so, that it's just... As Andy has said before, there's no reference point for optimism, is there? There's just every setback feels like, here we go again. This is Ipswich. It's always a false dawn. There's always a disappointment around the corner. And it's up to the club to change that narrative.
Hmm.
And they're not at the moment. They're kind of adding to it. So I guess Cook as a manager will be frustrated to kind of think, well, you know, you've got to give me time. You know, we had a decent run recently where they were getting 2 points a game quite consistently and great results at Portsmouth and Wickham, but we need to see it consistently to truly deeply believe that things are turning a corner. And that is why everyone will be feeling sort of so twitchy at the moment. It's just not happening, is it? And when is it going to happen?
I'd say the reference point for optimism that does exist at the moment is Cook's track record. But that's fading. I think in terms of reaching for a kind of an optimism, sort of an optimist, if you want to be an optimist, you look at Cook's previous track record of promotions everywhere he's been and big turnarounds and how that's worked. But that can only last for so long. And I would say that's fading, if not faded. And I think that's only fair as well. You've been in the job coming up for about 9 months. Months now, that's enough time to be judged on where you're at right now.
When you talk about Paul Cook, maybe did he need to be more flexible, a plan B, etc., you have to realise that he has won 3 league titles, not just promotions, 3 league titles at 3 different clubs playing this exact way. So if you've done something like that consistently throughout your career and it's consistently brought success, you're not going to go away from that, are you? You know, in any line of work. So I can understand why he's sort of keeping keeping faith in that basically if I stick to my principles, then ultimately it comes good. And he will tell you at all of his clubs, he's had sticky starts to start with and it turns. And maybe we will see that with Ipswich, but I think he does acknowledge that. I mean, he's used the term false dawns and disappointments and all of that. I think he does understand where Ipswich fans are coming from. And the worry for me now is that we're coming up to this pack out Portman Road campaign at Christmas and a big crowd's coming, and some of that feel good factor has just faded at the time where we needed momentum to really take hold. We're losing it, aren't we? And it feels like last night in particular felt like that was a real slowdown of momentum. Yeah.
That game should be, and the Barrow, they should be easy wins. I'm not talking about on the pitch. I'm talking about easy wins just to keep the levels sort of trundling along. It's not in the grand scheme of Ipswich Town beating Arsenal under 21s. Is no big deal, but it is kind of a really good opportunity to build, and we talk about it all the time, just to build some kind of cheap momentum. If they'd beaten Arsenal's under 21s, beat Barrow, yes, nobody's going to suddenly be thinking they're world beaters and going to rip up the league, but you do go to Charlton and with a bit of good feeling behind you. Now, depending on what happens on Saturday, of course, you're going to go with the pessimism levels may be higher. I think we saw that in the Rotherham game, didn't we? I obviously cannot speak for the thousands and thousands of people that attended the game, but I know how I felt going into that game, and I'm sure plenty others did too. A level of pessimism, because we've seen how Ipswich have been dealt with by Rotherham before. We knew where Ipswich were at that time, and I think the Charlton game could be the same if they're not careful. But they could have built some cheap, easy momentum and optimism going into that game, and then ultimately
they haven't won three games in a row since Cook's taken charge. Yeah, and this was, and he, they quite clearly, they targeted this week three games at home against Crewe, who are bottom, Arsenal's under 21s, and League Two Barrow, all at home. That was golden opportunity to go and finally do that, because Ipswich need to prove that they can string wins together. The only way that they're going to get back in this promotion mix now is by winning 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row at some point, or in certainly in little chunks along the way. And where's the evidence that they can do that? There is none now over a prolonged period of time. And if they couldn't do it this week, how can you find the belief that, oh, well, it could happen further down the line? That's kind of where the mindset is at the moment. And Andy's right. I think everyone came to that Rotherham game. It felt like in the air, there was a sense of, impending doom about that atmosphere. And I think if that's in the mindset of fans, that must be in the mindset of players as well. They're not infallible. They're psychologically, they must kind of, they've not got that sort of winning habit ingrained in them where you go out, you walk out on the pitch and you feel like you've won before you've even kicked a ball. And Ipswich haven't been able to build that. And that's the worry.
Mm. Okay, well, this is depressing, chaps. shall we move on to something that is good to see before we talk a little bit about Saturday and who should play in the FA Cup and how Town approach that? Some nice news this morning out of the club. A legend, a familiar face, someone we're very pleased to see back at the club, John McGreal, Hutchie, is back in Ipswich Town. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this and how you feel about it?
Yep. He's back at Ipswich Town. We know he's been around. He's watched training a fair amount. We see him. I would say he's been at the vast majority of Ipswich's home games this year. So he's been around, but he's back at the club, working with the club's sort of the higher levels of their academy, working with the 23s and across the academy, working on player development and some individual training as well. Clearly a good coach. He's been a manager in the EFL. Had 5 years at Colchester, the briefest of spells at Swindon, which he probably won't be talking about particularly quickly. Didn't manage a single game there, but worked with a lot of young players at Colchester. During that time, they've obviously changed course since, but young players advanced them, made the playoffs with them, and having someone of that experience around can only be beneficial. I would say it's the appointments just keep on coming within the sort of the background structure of the club, but this to me seems like a decent one.
Siri, any thoughts on McGrill? Just nice to see, isn't it, having someone like that around the club?
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the job title, the fact he's kind of assistant to Kieran Dyer with the under-23s with a kind of an overarching player development in the academy role. You'd think he might be able to help with sort of first-team defensive duties, with his background. I talked about the set pieces not being particularly well defended. I think Paul Cook revealed recently at the Fans Forum that Francis Jeffers does defensive set pieces. Francis Jeffers was a top striker in his day, but I don't know if how well qualified he is for doing defensive set piece work. John McGrill is obviously a very good defender in his day, but we're going to have more backroom staff than we are players soon, aren't we? It's for him to be on the doorstep. He's Paul Cook's good friend, we're led to believe. I think when there was speculation back in the summer as to whether John might be the assistant manager, when Liam Richardson had kind of gone to Wigan and we were talking about who Cook might have instead, John's name was mentioned quite a bit, and I was kind of led to believe that Paul almost didn't want to sour sort of any friendship that he had with John. Obviously, both Liverpudlians, and or there was reservation on both sides as to whether they should sort of turn that friendship into a professional capacity. But a man of his experience on your doorstep that knows the club, it would seem a shame not to use it, and ultimately Ipswich have decided to use it, so that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, good stuff. Before we move on, just a reminder to support our sponsor Manscaped. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery. Lots of Christmas gift options at manscaped.com right now. And also, Hutchie, before we move on, what's your football shirt of the day that's just peeking over your right-hand shoulder there? I see...
Stu knows.
What looks to be...
I don't know if I know.
I'm liking the shoulder.
Green
stripes.
Green, yellow and red stripes. Adidas stripes on the shoulder.
Any guesses?
I've no idea.
Is it a club shirt?
Yeah.
Is it a special edition club shirt?
I guess so, in a way. Yeah.
Is it like a sort of third kit or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it from Germany?
No.
Spain?
No. For audio listeners, it's black. It's got a fair amount of red on it, and as you've said, it's got red, yellow, and green.
Red, yellow, and green Adidas stripes on the shoulder, and we've got a sponsor that does that say Ziggo?
Yeah.
In red. I don't know what Ziggo is.
I reckon that there's some significance, isn't there, to the colours on the shoulders? Is that a flag of some kind?
It's not a flag.
Is it the Bob Marley?
Yes.
Shirt.
There we go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which club is that then?
It's Ajax, isn't it?
Ajax.
Yeah, Ajax.
You picked that up for yourself, actually. It looks nice.
It is nice.
Has it got the three little birds emblem on the? Is it on the neck? Yeah,
on the back of the collar.
Is this one going to be kept for your collection, Hutch, or is it going to be traded for your growing empire?
This is in the collection. It may or may not also be in the collection of my 3-year-old daughter as well in little size.
Oh, you got a little version for her.
Yeah, do you want to see it?
Yeah. Have you got it to hand? I mean, clearly this is terrible audio, and it's not going out on video, but I want to see it. Hutchie there just displaying his shorts. There we go. Here we go. And he's back.
With shorts. Hey! With little shorts as well. There's your three little birds.
Nice. That is nice. One day, Hutchie, and I've already spoken to you about this, I want to do like a bit with you about all the shirts you've got and how they make you feel. And your favourites, etc. I think people would be interested, and that's nice. That is one of my favourites that I've seen in the Hutch collection thus far.
I'd say it's one of mine as well.
Do you never wear it?
No,
never. They're just hanging there.
Well, I've had that one a while, and think I put it on when I first got it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just like having them. This is
I like seeing there's like an online feature. I can't remember who does it, but they basically get a former player and they get all of the shirts that they played in and get them to kind of talk through their memories of different kits. There's a great story I saw the other day from Jody Morris, who was doing an interview with Jimmy Bullard, where Jimmy kind of interviews people while they're fishing. Jody Morris talked about, do you remember that Chelsea grey and orange sort of
cause
that they had? Cause, yeah. Jody Morris told this story about how he was suddenly, you know, his classic case of a youngster who'd been called up at the last minute to make his debut. But this was the days before you could readily print names and numbers kind of on shirts. So they dispatched him and the kit man off to like the local sports shop down the high street. Got his name and number printed on it, but they didn't have the correct colour. The name and numbers were orange, and the sports shop could only do standard white. So they then had to go and buy an orange highlighter pen and colour in the numbers.
That's amazing. There was another one recently with I cannot remember who it was. It was a former Scottish international who made his debut for Scotland and was like absolutely delighted to have made his debut for Scotland, I think. And he got his shirt framed and put up on the wall. It got framed up there and he had it on his wall for like 30, 40 years or something. And he had to get it reframed, but got it down and found out it wasn't even his shirt on there, that he'd managed to get somebody else. I think it was Gordon Strachan's or something like that. And he had the wrong shirt up on his wall for like 35 years as his, to mark his Scotland debut.
Have you ever worn that shirt, Hutchie, and listened to some Bob Marley?
Yeah.
You have? Outstanding. Yeah. What's the link? I mean, I know Bob Marley loved football. He was a good player as well, wasn't he? What's the link with him and
it's just I think it's just a cultural thing. I think they've kind of adopted it quite heavily. They play Three Little Birds. I know Ipswich did it for a brief period, but like,
yeah,
Ajax really do it. Like, it's really part of their culture. If you've been to Amsterdam, you might know why. but yeah, there's a lot of it's very heavily ingrained in the culture of the club.
Okay, fantastic. Right then, from Bob Marley to the FA Cup second round, Barrow at home, boys. This is a game again. This is a big game for Ipswich Town, and it sounds crazy to be saying a game against Barrow, who are really struggling in League Two, and the FA Cup is a big game, but it is. So we know in the first round against Oldham, Cook went full strength. Put out his league side for that game, and that didn't really work out. But if you're Paul Cook, what are you doing for this one, Stewie? He's got to go strong again, hasn't he? I suppose
Charlton,
you've got
Charlton away on the horizon on Tuesday night with 3,000 plus fans going there. That's a bigger game than Barrow, but it's chicken and egg, isn't it? You've got to get that win to kind of get the feel good factor going into that one. Mix and match. I think it will probably be the core of his sort of first team, with maybe some of the ones that put their hand up from Tuesday night, given another sort of audition chance to maybe prove a second time that they should be in that team for Charlton. What do you reckon, Andy?
I'd be going as full as I possibly could, but that would include some of the changes we've talked about, would include Penny have another go at left back, probably. I'd be tempted to play Idris with Morsi in the middle there for the energy. I know Idris, in theory, has kind of played the Morsi role in these teams in nominally, but I think they could operate together. I'd like to see that. They would be the two. If I'd like to think that, again, we don't get... There's not much clarity on this. I'd like to think that Wes Burns isn't too far away from an involvement again in this, and I'd like to get him back on the pitch, but I'd be
Does
going.
Does Piggott get another go?
This is one that if I was a football manager, I would really struggle with. Joe Piggott deserves to have played more football than he has. Again, you've talked chicken and egg a minute ago, Stu. I think Joe Piggott's probably the ultimate chicken and egg. How can you expect Joe Piggott to hit the heights and hit top form if you're not giving him the games and the minutes? But if he doesn't do it for you in those games and in those minutes, how many more can you give him? you're at a stage where you want to get Macaulay Bond scoring goals again. I'd be tempted to go
with
Macaulay
Bond start against Charlton? The answer, yes. I think, is still yes. So do you want to try and give Macaulay Bond the chance to get a goal into himself on Saturday to go into that game?
Yes.
So I think we've probably answered the question there, haven't we? As much as I really feel for Joe Piggott at the moment, he cut a frustrated figure last night. I don't think I realised at the time that I think the goalkeeper got a good hand on, or got a slight touch onto his penalty to turn it onto the post. And as Andy said, he finished really well. I thought he worked really hard. But, you know, you want to get Macaulay Bond back in form, don't you?
Mm. All right then, boys. For my benefit, because I've got to do a likely lineup later on today before I have a day off tomorrow. What side are we saying then? What, give me a side, Stewie.
Do you want me to fill it in the paper? Go on, Stewie. What are we saying first?
Walton in goal, obviously. Janoi, be Edmondson and Toto again, I imagine. Matt Penny, I think, will get another go at left back. Morsey. What does he do with the other central midfielder? Fraser again in the deeper role. Give Carroll some more minutes. El Mazzouni, as Andy's mentioned. So you've got some other options in there. Or do you try and get Lee Evans going again, who's gone off the boil? That'll be an interesting selection. Bon up front, we've just discussed. Help me out with the three behind the strike.
I think Chaplin should be one of them. My gut feeling is that he probably would go with Aluko, Chaplin and Selena as the three, which is, am I right in saying that was the same that started against Crewe? They're not the three that I'd pick if everybody was fit. If maybe I'm being a bit optimistic and thinking we might see Wes Burns again. If Wes Burns is fit, I'd have him straight back in there. But I don't know. Aluko, Chaplin and Selena, maybe a bit harsh on Fraser. Maybe you give Idris this game next to Morsey to see what you evaluate those two ahead of Charlton. I'd probably Aluko, Chaplin, Selena, probably.
Has Jackson not done anywhere near enough to be even considered for a starting place?
Again, it's a difficult one because it depends what you're using this team for. I'm not sure Paul Cook is that close to wanting to give Caden Jackson a start in the league. It would be harsh to not give him another game potentially, but it depends what this game is for in Paul Cook's mind. You want to win, but you also want it, the dual purpose of get the players going again. So I don't see why Aluko couldn't play on the left. And I'd be tempted by that maybe with Jackson on the right, Chaplin in the middle and Aluko coming in off the left. I don't know, but I think this all just highlights that nobody knows what the blend is in that attacking three. If Wes Burns isn't there, it becomes a little bit more difficult.
And this is, I mean, all kind of joking aside, and however pessimistic, optimistic you want to be, this is a game that Ipswich Town should win. Barrow are, whatever side they put out, I mean, Barrow are toiling towards the bottom of League Two. I think they're on a really bad run of results. This is just a game that, as we said before, this is just a winnable game. Town should win it, get into the third round and move on, shouldn't they, Stu? Oh, no, it's not that simple.
We're too long in the tooth as Ipswich Town followers to be saying that now. I'm reluctant. Maybe we need to lose a little bit of this arrogance surrounding Ipswich Town.
No,
I'm not being arrogant. Like, otherwise, you start lowering expectations.
Of course they should. It's Barrow. It's Barrow at home. Yeah, in the FA Cup. We're talking about a first choice.
But what I'm saying is you've got to earn it. They should be winning it. Of course they should. I'm not saying our standard should suddenly slip and saying, well, it shouldn't. Yes, they should win this game. They have to win this game, but they need to work for it. And we need to stop sort of going into it with, they'll win that and just taking it for granted. I don't know if that attitude, that sort of subconscious mindset sometimes is seeping in to the players a little bit when they get ahead in games and then they step off the gas. You know, Ipswich Town are in League One. They're in the third season of League One now. Ipswich Town have lost to Arsenal's under-21s. They've lost to West Ham's under-21s. And nothing can be, you know, they need to earn every time they step on the pitch. They need to have that steeliness, that durability, all those things that Paul Cook talked about last night. And they can't go into this all sort of wishy-washy, oh, it's Barrow, start thinking about who we could potentially get in the third round. No, get the job done and you know, make sure you are on it on Saturday. Don't start thinking ahead to Charlton and Wigan just yet. Let's start doing some wins consistently, please.
Yeah, that is a concern, isn't it? We've talked a lot about winning becoming a habit, but also losing becomes a habit, and losing games you'd be expected to win. You go out of the trophy to Arsenal's kids, you lose in the FA Cup every season because that's just what you do. There's a definite danger to that. And like Hutchie says, you can't go into this game with anything other than a, you know, Ipswich Town must win this game attitude. No matter what team they put on the pitch, Barrow have to be beaten at Portman Road.
Yeah, they do. And that attitude is part of that, isn't it? That going into it and having the... you're right, Stu. There is... I think it's a different question, isn't it? Is what do you think will happen or what should happen? And the answer to what should happen is that this team should be good enough because the players are good enough and the players should be motivated and driven enough because that's part of being a good football player. And that's why they should be winning these games against teams in the bottom third of League Two really comfortably. But you're right that we've seen time and time again that some of that isn't in the makeup. Sometimes.
I want to see the body language to be correct. I want to see we be shit scared to lose this game on Saturday. And that attitude going into it needs to be, we cannot lose this. We will not lose this. Hmm. And I want to see that sort of fire in the belly across that team that we've got to beat these today, lads. And, you know, even when they get in front, I don't want to see that drop off. That's what we need to see with our own eyes, because at the minute, it's not just the results, it's the performances that have gone with them. Over, you know, since that Wickham game at the start of November, we've had, you know, the Oldham game, 0-0 against Colchester, 0-0 against Oxford, made heavy work of the replay win at Oldham. Sunderland, okay, we're saying it was a good performance, but didn't look like scoring in the second half. Rotherham was what it was. Crewe was pretty unconvincing, so... It's your belief comes from performance levels and what you see. And Paul Cook's routinely said you can't kid supporters. There's a reason some of this feel-good factor has faded recently. People know what they're seeing with their eyes. It's up to the players to change that mood, and it needs to change quickly.
Mm. Okay, then, boys. Anything else to add on your thoughts on that one before we start to wrap up?
Nope.
No other business.
No other business. Before we head off today, I want to shout out one of our top listeners. Yesterday, it was nice. We're getting tagged in quite a lot of people's top podcast stats from the year, which I believe is something they do on Spotify. And I want to shout out one listener in particular. Do let us know, by the way, if we are your top pods. That's always nice. And I'm particularly keen to see if anyone can beat Al Gibson, who spent, according to stats, 11,101 minutes listening to the Kings of Anglia podcast so far this year. Still, obviously, a month to go. That's 185 hours, boys, or almost 8 days entirely listening to us wax lyrical about Ipswich Town. Thank you, Al, first of all. That's very nice. I'm hoping we've kept you entertained. 8 days listening to KOA, Stewie.
So do you remember when Football Manager, Andy will know this all too well, when you saved, you got a little message saying, like, remember to eat and stuff like that. If you got really deep into it, I'd like to think Al's getting some messages along those lines.
Well, if you can beat that, and that would be an incredible effort to beat Al's 11,101 minutes, do let us know. And if you are listening to the show, thank you very much. It's much appreciated. It's nice to know that people enjoy it and we're not just sat in our bedrooms talking to ourselves, which I do enough of anyway. Boys, anything else to mention before we take our leave and get on with the day ahead, building up to Barrow in the FA Cup?
No other business.
No other business. Just don't do a replay, Ipswich. Please don't do
a
replay.
No, we don't want a replay. Just go out there, smash them. These sides should be swept aside at Portman Road. It's Barrow at Portman Road. We're just talking about losing to Arsenal's kids. In 1978, Town beat Arsenal to win the FA Cup, the full Arsenal side. Now we're talking about them losing to kids.
Only 10 years ago that we had the Priskin game and you know, beating them in the semi-final of the League Cup. So these are all little, just when you kind of think that there's not sort of another little sobering reminders of where Ipswich Town are at as a football club. But it was last night was certainly one of those. But we go again.
I'm
on
over
to
it.
The next one.
I'm ready for Town just to start winning now, boys. So I'm sure everyone else is that listens to this. So fingers crossed they can do this weekend. Just a reminder before we go. Support our sponsor, Manscaped, manscaped.com. Use the code KOA for 20% off and free delivery, as if I've not mentioned that enough. And also follow us across our social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. I've not been drinking, honest. I know it's December. And also leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because we've not had one of those since September. We've had a lot of them, but not one since September. And that helps pushes up the visibility in the iTunes charts, which means more people can discover this and join the KOA army. Okay, friends, well, that's today's pod out of the way. I hope you've enjoyed it. It has been, I suppose, necessarily depressing and a little bit serious today. Fingers crossed when we convene again in this virtual chat room on Monday, it'll be much happier. Town will be in the third round of the FA Cup, and who knows who they could get then. And then we'll be building up as well, of course, to the big game at Charlton on Tuesday. Have a great weekend, and we'll speak to you again next time.
Crime to football, Brexit to football. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.